Plates in the Air. Plates in the Air 2015 came in like a tide, bringing new faces, bold moves, and cracks we wouldn't see clearly until much later. We'd had a surge of interest in taking over the Lady Neville Cafe in Banstead. Nothing unusual about that. But among all the hopefuls, two names kept rising to the top, Javid and Mohammad. Both had backgrounds in diplomacy, former Afghan consulates, now trying their hand at business. Mohammad was the older of the two, calm, quietly spoken, always a little distant. He was funding the venture but had no desire to be on the front line. Javid was the opposite, energetic, eager, and willing to roll up his sleeves. His wife was joining him in the cafe too. They were moving to Banstead, renting nearby, enrolling their son in the local school. They jumped into it with real commitment, taking salaries and bringing in weekend help. There was drive there, something that gave me hope. Mohammad, though, was less hands-on. He'd float in now and again, but it was clear from early on that cafe operations weren't exactly in his wheelhouse. I still remember one morning, he pulled me aside, serious as anything, and asked, "Do we have to sell ham and bacon?" He looked genuinely distressed. As a practicing Muslim, the idea didn't sit well with him. I had to smile. "Bit late to ask that now," I said. "This isn't Kabul, this is Banstead. Customers want bacon, so we sell bacon." He took it in stride, and strangely, that conversation opened a new door. A few days later, he pitched me something completely out of left field, setting up a Pistachios in the Park at Kabul International Airport. He thought we had the perfect angle, a British franchise owned by Muslims. I reminded him, "Well, I may have been born into a Muslim family, but I'm an atheist." He shrugged, "Doesn't matter." It was a long shot, but we ran with it. We had paperwork flying between countries, even registered a company, Pistachios in Kabul looted. For a while, it felt like it might actually happen, but the numbers killed it. The airport wanted outrageous rent plus a massive cut of the profits. There wouldn't be anything left for us, not even enough to cover franchise fees. We shut it down quietly. By 2017, the company was dissolved. Back in Banstead, things started to unravel. Mohammad began questioning what Javid was being paid. He started getting resentful. Accusations flew, and eventually, Mohammad offered Javid £10,000 to walk away. Javid took it. That left Mohammad to run the cafe himself, despite living in Watford. He didn't move, just started commuting, relying heavily on staff to open and close. The cafe started to lose its rhythm. The life Javid and his wife had pumped into it began to drain away. At the same time, we had our eyes on something much bigger, Cassiabury Park in Watford, a major new cafe build. We were shortlisted for the tender, but this time the council wanted proof of funding up front. No empty promises. They were putting real money into the infrastructure. So I made a bold move. I borrowed £80,000 from HNW Lending, secured against my house. It was a capital repayment loan over 24 months. Risky, yes. But I figured if we won the bid, I'd flip the build cost to a franchisee, cover the loan with interest, and pocket a margin through rent and management. It was tight, but possible. Then, as if I didn't have enough going on, Theo, Diane's son, dropped a bombshell. He was miserable in his call-calling assurance job. His boss was screwing staff over, wage cuts, shady practices, people being dropped like dead weight. He wanted out. Along with Rick, who had years of industry experience, and Jason, they had a plan. Start their own firm. Problem was, no bank would touch them. Diane brought it up at home, and I said, "Bring them over. Let them pitch it, Dragon's Den style." So one evening, the three of them stood in my dining room, nervous but excited. They had numbers, projections, a full plan. They needed £20,000 for equipment, office space, and phones. Their revenue forecasts were strong. Now, I'd already taken out that HNW loan at 1.05% monthly interest, so if I was going to give them money, I needed it to make sense. I said, "I'll give you the 20, but if you don't repay the money with interest back within a year, Diane and I get 10% equity." They agreed. I wrote the contract myself. Honestly, if it had just been Theo, I'd have handed over the cash, no strings attached. But this was business. Later, they needed another £5,000 for wages. I sent that too. Their startup took off. They were making serious headway. A year later, I nudged Theo with a grin. "Time's up. So, we own 10% now?" He looked genuinely confused. "But we already paid you. I gave the money to Mum." And then I remembered. I was the one who told him to give the repayment to Diane, since the loan had originally passed through her. My intentions were good. I was happy for her to have it. What I didn't expect was the silence. I turned to Diane. She calmly announced, "I used it for bills." Bills, of course. I wasn't going to spark a family row over money. Absolutely not. But forget it? Not then. Not now. Around that time, Regate was intense and I was barely keeping my head above water, juggling the day-to-day grind of running the cafe, staying hands-on, and managing the growing franchise network. It pulled me straight back to the early days at Manor House Gardens, that same relentless pressure. We needed fresh energy to lift the load. Gabriella Adolfi came to mind. She'd once shown interest in Banstead, but that opportunity had long slipped away. Regate, though, this was bigger, busier, and exactly the challenge she was ready for. She stepped in without hesitation and took control. Meanwhile, over at Frimley Lodge Park, another story was unfolding, a slow-burning issue we couldn't ignore. Sharn, the franchisee, seemed steady enough on the surface. His brother had Sandhurst. His sister was running Palwell Common. But Sharn wasn't satisfied. He wanted more. His eyes were firmly fixed on our next prize, the potential new site in Farnborough. But his books didn't line up. GP numbers looked good, but he was always behind on payments. Diane suspected gambling, drinking. The council had just added floodlit pitches and asked us to open later on match nights. Sharn agreed, but only if we renegotiated his lease early. I thought it was a good idea. The lease still had 18 months left, and this felt like the perfect chance to secure a fresh deal, especially with the old terms already being revised to include longer opening hours. So I called Lee, our council contact. What he told me floored me. They'd been sending in mystery shoppers. Golf players were paying, but not all payments were showing in the till. The council had access to our system. They could see exactly what was and wasn't going through. Money was vanishing. We investigated, found the till key left in the drawer, allowing it to be opened without logging sales. A handwritten sign asked customers to pay 50p for lost golf balls, straight into Sharn's pocket. The CCTV switched off. We confronted him without hesitation. At first, he wriggled and twisted, dodging the truth with slippery excuses, tossing the blame at his staff as though their supposed incompetence were the real betrayal. But when we produced the footage, the grainy, merciless evidence captured by the council's mystery shoppers, his hand caught red-handed stuffing notes into his pocket. There was nowhere left to run. His mask cracked. The color drained from his face, his swagger collapsing into silence as the truth locked around him like a set of iron manacles. The council's ultimatum struck like a gavel. Either Sharn is gone or the police take over. And if he goes, you step in. No more franchising, no loopholes, no second chances. Adrian and I went to his home that evening, the tension thick enough to choke on. The walls seemed to close in as we sat across from him, the weight of the council's decree heavy on my shoulders. My chest tightened, but I forced my words out steady and hard, leaving him no escape. Stay, and the police will strip you bare. Leave, and you walk away with at least a shred of dignity. He didn't answer. He couldn't. The silence stretched, suffocating, filled only by the sound of his world collapsing in on itself. Sure, the wheels of justice grind slowly, but we only had just over a year left on that contract. And with the council losing faith in Pistachios after two franchisees in a row had screwed up, a renewal was already a lost cause. Sharn knew it was game over. He didn't argue. So we terminated his contract and he walked. We moved fast. Remy and Josh stepped in. Two fresh faces, full of fire, determined to prove themselves. We even set them up in a modest two-up, two-down house near the park. A short walk to work. A new start for everyone. For a while it felt like balance had returned. But calm never lasts. Within weeks, the cracks showed. Whispers behind the counter, cold shoulders, arguments no customer ever heard. Whatever bond held them together snapped like brittle string. And then the inevitable. Josh packed up and left. Just like that, we were back on shaky ground. I wasn't ready to watch the whole thing collapse. So I called Steve, reliable, steady Steve. He joined forces with Remy, and together they kept the wheels turning. But by then, the Watford Cafe deal, the one I'd hung so many hopes on, had crashed and burned. The reinvestment fund we'd lined up, now just sitting there, idle. Here's the truth. I should have sent that money back, bar the $25,000 loan to Theo, wipe the slate, cut the risk. Any sensible person would have. But that's not me. Instead, another idea lit up in my head like a flare. Muhammad was miserable in Banstead, itching for a way out. What if I bought him out? If I could swing that, I could hand the keys to Ben and Alina, a young couple buzzing with ambition, desperate for a shot in Brighton, but strapped for cash. They were hungry, and hunger drives business. The problem? My pockets were empty. I'd already sunk £25,000 into Theo's team. The tank was dry, so I did what I'd done before. I went back to H&W Lending, another loan, secured, once again against my house. Because when the cards were down, I always played the same way, all in. I offered Muhammad £80,000 for the business, fixtures and all. He agreed. It was a clean handover. Before the transition, though, I felt we needed a break, a chance to pause and breathe before plunging back into the grind. So I organized a short family bonding getaway. Just a handful of us. Diane declined. Fred joined with his daughter, Frances. Ben, Josh, Alina, and I made up the rest. Bob, Fred's son, couldn't make it. Remy didn't have a passport, and Luke was still working in Gibraltar. We were stretched thin, barely holding it together, each of us with plates spinning at dizzying speed. But for a few days, we exhaled. And then, like always, we returned to the chaos, a little sunburned, slightly rested, and ready to keep going. Just about.